Cause of all causes, and today we are reading text 25.
Tamasadapi bhutader vikurvanadha punnabaha tasya matra guna shabdo lingam yadrishtir drishyayo.
Tamasat, from the darkness of false ego. Api, certainly. Bhutade, of the material elements. Vikurvanat, because of transformation. Abhut, generated. Nabha, the sky. Tasya, its. Matra, subtle form. Guna, quality. Shabda, sound. Lingam, characteristics. Yat, as its. Drishtir, the seer. Drishyayo, of what is seen. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Translation: from the darkness of false ego, the first of the five elements, namely the sky, is generated. Its subtle form is the quality of sound, exactly as the seer is in relationship with the seen. Please repeat. From the darkness of false ego, the first of the five elements, namely the sky, is generated. Its subtle form is the quality of sound, exactly as the seer is in relationship with the seen. Purport. The five elements, namely sky, air, fire, water, and earth, are all but different qualities of the darkness of false ego. This means that the false ego, in the sum total form of Mahatattva, is generated from the marginal potency of the Lord. And due to this false ego of lording it over material creation, ingredients are generated for the false enjoyment of the living being. The living being is practically the dominating factor over the material elements as the enjoyer, though the background is the Supreme Lord. Factually, save and except the Lord, no one can be called the enjoyer, but the living entity falsely desires to become the enjoyer. This is the origin of false ego. When the bewildered living entity desires this, the shadow elements are generated by the will of the Lord, and the living entities are allowed to run after them as after a phantasmagoria. It is said that first the tanmatra sound is created, and then the sky. And in this verse it is confirmed that actually it is so. But sound is the subtle form of the sky, and the distinction is like that between the seer and the seen. The sound is the representation of the actual object, as the sound produced, speaking of the object, gives an idea of the description of the object. Therefore, sound is the subtle characteristic of the object. Similarly, sound representation of the Lord, in terms of his characteristics, is the complete form of the Lord, as was seen by Vasudev and Maharaj Dasharath, the fathers of Lord Krishna and Lord Rama. The sound representation of the Lord is non-different from the Lord himself, because the Lord and his representation in sound are absolute knowledge. Lord Chaitanya has instructed us that in the holy name of the Lord, as sound representation of the Lord, all the potencies of the Lord are invested. Thus, one can immediately enjoy the association of the Lord by the pure vibration of the sound representation of his holy name. And the concept of the Lord is immediately manifested before the pure devotee. A pure devotee, therefore, is not aloof from the Lord even for a moment. The holy name of the Lord, as recommended in the Shastras, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, may therefore be constantly chanted by the devotee, aspiring to be constantly in touch with the Supreme Lord. One who is thus able to associate with the Lord is sure to be delivered from the darkness of the created world, which is a product of false ego. Tamasi ma jyotir gamaha. Om agyanatimirandasya jnananjana shalakaya चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपा कदा मह्यं ददाति स्वपदान्तिकं मुखं करोति वाचालं पङ्गुं लङ्घयते गिरिं यत्कृपातमहं वन्दे श्रीगुरुदीनतारिणं वाञ्छाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्यैव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौरभक्तवृन्दा हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्णा So this chapter is entitled The Cause of All Causes and it's actually a conversation between Narad Muni and Lord Brahma. So Narad Muni who's also the son of Lord Brahma and he's also the guru. Brahma is the guru actually of Narad Muni. He has come to Lord Brahma because he's a little confused. And he comes to Lord Brahma seeking clarifications for the confusion that is there in the mind. And his confusion he poses in the form of series of questions to Lord Brahma in the beginning of this chapter. So some of the questions which Narad Muni asks Lord Brahma, and these questions are mainly about the creation. Because he sees that his father is constantly engaged in the creation of this world. And he sees that that looks like that it's the prime duty of his father. So he wants to understand more. He wants to go deep into this subject matter and he wants to understand more about how this creation is taking place. So Narad Muni poses certain questions to Lord Brahma. He asks, he says that how was this world created, which we see before us right now, which is manifested right now? What is the background of this material world? He also asks that who is the creator? To me it appears it is you, but I want to understand from you that who is the creator of this entire creation and how was it created? The next question he asks is under whose control is this whole world? So he is asking about the creator, he is asking about the controller and then he is asking Narad Muni. He is saying that who is the source of your knowledge? How is it that you have so much knowledge? How did you get this knowledge to create this whole phenomenal world? And under whose control or under whom are you working? So these are some of the questions which Narad Muni poses to Lord Brahma. And we see that after all these questions, in the next verse, Narad Muni, it shows his humility also. He's inquisitive, but he's showing his humility also. He's telling Lord Brahma, that you please kindly instruct me on all these questions because you are my guru and I am your student and I really seek to understand deeply about these subject matters. And please accept me as your student and instruct me in all these matters because you have seen the whole world, you have created the whole world. So only you can answer these questions. So as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Tad vidhi pranipatena pari prashnena sevaya. So what is the meaning of that verse? The meaning of that verse is being demonstrated by Narad Muni practically over here. He poses questions. He is asking, pari prashnina. He is asking so many questions to his guru. But at the same time, he is very humble. He is not doing it in a challenging mode. He is doing it because he wants to go deep in this subject matter. And he wants to clear up this confusion about who is the creator, how is this world being created. So he is going to the right source and he is trying to understand from his guru how all these things are happening in the world. The second point which is to be noted in this conversation between Narad Muni and Lord Brahma is that Narad Muni is very intelligent. He is seeing that Lord Brahma is engaged in creation. So he can actually very easily conclude that okay, Lord Brahma is the creator of this phenomenal world. But he's still seeking to go deeper and find out what is the actual cause. And that is because Narad Muni sees Lord Brahma engaged in austerities and meditation. And he says also in the next verse, he says that I thought that you are the ultimate creator of this world. But I can see that you are engaged in some meditation. You are engaged in performing austerities. So if you are actually the creator of this world, then why do you have to do these austerities? Why do you have to meditate? And who is that person on whom you are meditating? That means there is someone beyond you, so that you can meditate on him. So this shows the intelligence of Narad Muni. But we see in this material world, we see there are so many worshippers of different demigods, especially Lord Shiva. We see that most of these worshippers, they accept the demigod whom they are worshipping as the supreme. Or at the most, they may say that everyone is equal. But they do not question, like Narad Muni is observing and questioning, that how is Brahma meditating on someone? That means there has to be someone beyond him. So many times we see pictures of Lord Shiva meditating. He is sitting on a deer skin and he has Rudraksh beads on his hand. But his worshippers seldom question that, you know, we think Lord Shiva is supreme, then why is he sitting and doing mala? Why is he rotating these Rudraksh beads? That means he must be meditating on someone. He must be chanting someone else's names. Because obviously someone will not sit and chant his own names the whole day. So, but this is the intelligence which lacks in the material world. People are not questioning this. People are just blindly accepting based on their own speculative knowledge to be someone to be as supreme without questioning further. But Narad Muni is doing that over here. He is questioning Lord Brahma because he sees Lord Brahma performing austerities. That is a second important point between the conversation of Narad Muni and Brahma. And now Brahma starts answering the questions of Narad Muni. So Brahma first of all glorifies, he praises Narad Muni. He says that it is so good that you are asking these questions, Narada. And because it is for the benefit of me as well as the entire world. That is what Brahma tells Narad Muni. And it is similar to what Sukadeva Goswami tells Parikshit Maharaj. Parikshit Maharaj asked those six questions in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. What is the duty of a dying man? Who is Krishna? And can you please explain to me about his incarnations? Like that six series of questions Parikshit Maharaj asks Sukadeva Goswami. And as soon as Parikshit Maharaj finishes asking his questions, Sukadeva Goswami glorifies Parikshit Maharaj. He says, Variya ne sate prashna. So that means he says that the questions you have asked are very glorious, because they are for the benefit of the entire mankind. So we know that actually Narad Muni is a pure devotee. He would not be confused because the Lord reveals himself and reveals the entire knowledge about him to pure devotees. But this conversation is happening mainly for the benefit of the readers like us, so that we can benefit by understanding how is this material world created. And so that people like us in the material world who are conditioned don't accept Lord Brahma as the supreme creator, which actually many people do. Especially in India, if you go and ask people who is the creator, they will immediately say Brahma. They have never gone, tried to go beyond this, that who is there beyond Brahma? If he is performing austerities, there must be someone beyond him. So actually Narad Muni is doing this conversation with Brahma so that people like us benefit and there is clarification on who is the actual creator. So Brahma first glorifies Narad Muni's question and then he thanks him. He says that thank you so much for asking this question, because it gives me an opportunity to speak about the Supreme Lord. So we see these are the characteristics of pure devotees. Pure devotees always want to ask questions about the Supreme Lord and go deeper in the subject matter of Supreme Lord. And pure devotees also like to hear about the Supreme Lord and talk about the Supreme Lord. And therefore Lord Brahma is so, Prabhupada writes in the purport where Brahma is answering the questions of Narad Muni. He says that because Brahma is a devotee of the Lord, he becomes enlivened at the prospect that now I have to talk about the Supreme Lord. Now here is an opportunity to glorify the Supreme Lord. So he becomes so happy. And we ourselves face these situations. Like if we have gone on book distribution, for example. And you know, first of all, people don't even stop. 90% of the people don't stop when we approach them. But if one person has stopped and he asks that, oh, can you please tell me something more about this? Then how happy we become. Because it is giving us an opportunity to explain about Krishna to that person. And it gives us great joy that this is a person who's interested little bit in spiritual life. So we really become enlivened. In the same way, Brahma is enlivened right now. That Narad Muni is asking all these questions to me so that it gives me an opportunity to glorify my Supreme Lord. It gives me an opportunity to go talk deeply
about the subject matter, about the qualities, characteristics of the Supreme Lord. So this is what Brahma is thanking Narad Muni about. And after that, Brahma starts answering the questions of Narad Muni. Now, Burijan Prabhu writes in his Unveiling the Lotus Feet that Brahma is answering the questions of Narad Muni strictly based on what he heard from Lord Krishna. So that pastime will come further in the Srimad Bhagavatam, that when Brahma is born from the navel of Lord Garbhodakshai Vishnu, he is completely confused. He doesn't know where he is, why he is sitting there, what is this lotus flower on which he is sitting, and he sees complete darkness around himself. And as soon as he is born, first Brahma tries to find the source of his creation by mechanical means. So Brahma actually travels down the stem of the entire length of the stem of the lotus flower to find out what is at the root of this lotus flower. But he completely fails in finding out. And Prabhupada explains there that is because he was using mechanical means to find the source of creation. But and only by spiritual means and by inquiry you can, and by bhakti you can find out these things. So he was unsuccessful in his attempt. And then Brahma comes back on the lotus flower. And he hears the sound, tapa, that is the sound created by the water in which the lotus stem is there. So he meditates for thousands and thousands of years. And at the end, he has darshan of Garbhodakshai Vishnu. And then the Lord reveals to him Chatushloki Bhagavatam. The entire Bhagavatam condensed in four verses. So this is how Brahma received his knowledge directly from the Lord. And now he is explaining to Narad Muni based on what he has heard from the Lord directly. So as it is, he is not deviating, he is not adding his own speculative knowledge. He is as it is explaining to Narad Muni. And after this, Narad Muni will go and tell Vyasadev whatever he has heard from Lord Brahma. And then Vyasadev will write the Srimad Bhagavatam and explain it to his son Sukadev Goswami. And then Sukadev Goswami will have the conversation with Parikshit Maharaj on the banks of the Ganga. And within that conversation which is happening and the assembly, there is one sage present called Suta Goswami, who thousands of years later will explain this entire science of the Srimad Bhagavatam to the sages of Naimisharanya. So Burijan Prabhu writes that this is called as Guru Parampara or disciplic succession. That Brahma explains whatever he has heard from Krishna to Narad Muni. Then Narad Muni explains whatever he has heard from Brahma to Vyasadev. Then Vyasadev explains whatever he has heard from Narada to Sukadev Goswami. And then Sukadev Goswami explains whatever he has heard from Vyasadev to Parikshit Maharaj. And over there, Suta Goswami, who is listening, he explains everything he has heard from Sukadev Goswami to the sages of Naimisharanya. And that is how the disciplic succession is flowing. And Burijan Prabhu explains that that is exactly how knowledge should flow. From one guru to the other. There should be no deviations. No disciple should try to concoct his own philosophy or write his own books. He should simply repeat the words of his spiritual master in the disciplic succession. So that is one more important aspect which comes about in this chapter. And then Brahma starts answering the questions. In the next series of verses which are even going on now, Brahma is trying to establish that how he is not the creator of this material world. And how it is the Lord Krishna, who is the creator of this phenomenal world. And Brahma is actually just creating based on what the Lord has already created. So Brahma is saying that the Lord has already done Sarga, which is the primary creation. And Brahma is just engaged in creating Visarga, which is secondary creation. And the whole secondary creation is based on all the material elements or all the ingredients which have given by Lord Krishna to Brahma. So this is what Lord Brahma starts explaining to Narad Muni now. And this conversation actually about creation and about Sarga and Visarga is not just the first time that is happening or the last time it's happening in the Srimad Bhagavatam. This topic of creation will keep repeating throughout Srimad Bhagavatam. So it is also explained in the third canto in so much detail in the conversation between Maitreya Muni and Vidura. So we know the pastime about Vidura, that how he was insulted by Duryodhan and he was driven out of the court. So Vidura actually took that opportunity to go on pilgrimage and he did not want to, it gave him an opportunity not to participate in the war. So he goes on pilgrimage and on his pilgrimage he meets Maitreya Muni at the source of the Ganga in Haridwar. He meets Maitreya Muni and there he sits and again Vidura is also asking questions to Maitreya Muni. And as part of his questions, he asked Maitreya Muni that, can you please explain to me the how this material world is created? And same, almost similar questions to Narad Muni. And even in that section, I was just going through that section, and there also Maitreya Muni is so happy when Vidura asks these questions. So same like Brahma, he first thanks Vidura. He says, thank you so much for asking these questions to me, because it gives me an opportunity to speak about the Lord. So similar mood we see between Maitreya Muni and Lord Brahma, that pure devotees are always thankful for the opportunity. So the entire creation is explained in third canto as a conversation between Maitreya Muni and Vidura. And again in the third canto, this conversation is repeated between Kapila Muni and his mother Devahuti. And again Kapila Muni goes, it's called as the Sankhya philosophy or Sankhya Yoga. And Kapila Muni goes into great detail about how this material world is created. And again in the fifth canto, this description will come. How the planets, planetary situation is located, how is Jambudvip, all this, what are hellish planets. In detail, this description will be there. So we see that in Bhagavatam, again and again there is description about the creation of this world. And yesterday only I was discussing with some devotees that, oh, this is such a technical topic. When we read these topics, we feel that, oh, these are so technical, they are so dry, they are so philosophical, they are lacking in rasa, or they are lacking in any pastimes of the Lord. So sometimes we actually think, I wish this section gets over quickly. But just imagine Sukadev Parikshit Maharaj's consciousness. He is hearing in great detail every conversation that has happened at different levels. He is hearing about the conversation between Brahma and Narada. He is hearing again about the conversation between Maitreya Vidura. Again Parikshit Maharaj will hear about the conversation between Kapila Muni and Devahuti. So we see Parikshit Maharaj is not saying that, oh, I'm going to die. Why you are telling me all these dry philosophy? Please go through these technical sections first so that we can discuss about more the pastimes of the Lord. Parikshit Maharaj is not doing that. So again and again these topics occur in the Bhagavatam just to prove that first go through this, then only read the 10th canto or read the pastimes of the Lord. Even simple pastimes of the Lord, they start later in the Bhagavatam. And like the confidential pastimes, Rasleela and all comes in the 10th canto. But even pastimes of other incarnations only come later. First, the supremacy of the Lord is established by the Bhagavatam through these topics of going in detail about the creation. The first, the complication of creation is explained so that we realize that the Supreme Lord is no ordinary person. And He is actually the creator of this phenomenal world which has so many aspects to it. So again, that is why again and again Bhagavatam reiterates about creation and sub-creation and goes into great detail about every technical aspect of the creation and sub-creation. So now the entire conversation will be based on how Krishna is the Supreme Lord, and Brahma will explain in detail to Narad Muni about how this creation takes place. So he says that Brahma starts his conversation by saying that the first from the spiritual world, by Krishna's own will, there is a small cloud which is generated in the Brahma Jyoti, which is the effulgence of Krishna. So we know there is the spiritual world and there is the material world. And in between there is something called as the Viraja River or the Karuna Dakshayi ocean. So the Lord creates a small cloud in one corner of the Brahma Jyoti, which is His effulgence coming out of His own body from His own abode. And that cloud is called as Pradhan. So we will just go through a little bit of how this creation takes place. So that cloud is called as Pradhan. Now the first incarnation or expansion of the Lord, who is known as Karuna Dakshayi Vishnu, He actually lies down between the material world and this Pradhan, which is called as the Karuna Dakshayi ocean. He lies down over there and He glances at this Pradhan. So what does Pradhan mean? So Purijan Prabhu defines that Pradhan is actually the unmanifested material form, or a material form which is inert or which is still neutral. So all the ingredients are there in that Pradhan, but they are in the neutral state. The modes of material nature, everything else is present in the Pradhan, but they have not been agitated or activated yet. So everything is in its neutral state. The unmanifested primordial substance of the material world is called as Pradhan. And then Karuna Dakshayi Vishnu glances at this Pradhan. Now the glance of the Lord is also not just vacant. When we glance at something, nothing is going to happen. But when the Lord glances, His glance is actually composed of eternal time, the jivas, that is the living entities, and their karma. This is what the glance of the Lord comprises. And he glances at Pradhan, which is carrying all these things, and thus he impregnates Pradhan. And therefore Prabhupada again and again says that when scientists and philosophers claim that material nature has come about by chance or it is operating on its own, there is no creator behind it, Prabhupada always compares with a mother. Prabhupada says that no lady can become a mother or no child can be born till that lady is impregnated by a man. And Prabhupada always explains that in relation to the creation. So we see over here in this chapter, Brahma explains actually to Narad Muni that how there is this Pradhan and the Lord has to impregnate Pradhan to activate it so that all the other ingredients and the jivas can be further manifested. And this is proved in this Bhagavatam. So the Karunadakshaya Vishnu glances at Pradhan and because of his glance, the Pradhan gets activated. And when we say Pradhan gets activated, what happens to the Pradhan? The first thing that is manifested because of this activation or this agitation of Pradhan is the false ego and the three modes of material nature are produced. And then this agitated Pradhan is called as Mahatattva, where the ingredients or the material elements are in their active form. That means the false ego and three modes of material nature have now become active because time and the jivas and their karma were carried into Pradhan. So we see that the Lord's intervention is required at every stage of creation. No material creation can happen without the Lord's intervention, either through his glance or through his direct intervention. Even in the Visarga stage, when the secondary creation will happen, again the Lord will expand himself as Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. And he will actually expand himself as the universal form so that Brahma can understand how to create. He will see the body of the universal form and he will understand how the secondary creation has to take place. And then all the planets and various planetary systems will be created. So Prabhupada explains that at no point in time creation can go on without the intervention of the Supreme Lord. There is always a creator present behind. There is nothing which is happening by chance in this material world. So then after Karunadakshaya Vishnu has agitated this Pradhan into Mahatattva and the false ego and the three modes of material nature have become active, after that the various elements of the material world will start getting manifested. So the false ego first of all combines with the mode of goodness. And when it combines with the mode of goodness, mind is generated. And along with mind, the demigods who control the directions are generated. So false ego plus mode of goodness gives rise to mind and demigods who control directions. Then false ego combines with mode of passion. And when it combines with mode of passion, intelligence is generated and the working senses and knowledge acquiring senses are generated by the combination of false ego plus mode of passion. And then false ego combines with the mode of ignorance. And when false ego combines with the mode of ignorance, the various sense objects and the elements of the material world are generated. So when we say sense objects, that means sound, touch, form, all these shapes, smell, all these things are generated. Along with them, the concurrent material element is generated. So false ego plus mode of ignorance, the first thing that is generated is sound. And that is what we are reading in this verse. That from the darkness of false ego, that means false ego along with ignorance, because ignorance is always called as darkness. The first of the five elements, namely the sky, is generated and its subtle form is the quality of sound. So Prabhupada explains that material creation always goes from subtle to gross. So first always subtle forms will be created, then the gross forms will be created. And therefore when false ego combines with mode of ignorance, first sound is created. And then from sound, sky is generated. And from sky, the actual object is then generated, which is the ear. So then the second element which is generated by the combination of false ego and mode of ignorance is the second object, or which is air and touch. So air has a quality, its subtle form is touch. And then air contains the previous element. So every next consecutive element which is generated contains the previous element in it. So air has the quality of sound and sky in it. And from the combination of false ego and ignorance, the third element that is generated is form. The subtle is form and the gross is fire. And now fire will have both the qualities of air as well as the qualities of sky in it. Then the next one, from the combination of false ego and ignorance, is taste, which is the subtle form, and the gross form is water. And again, water will contain all the previous elements, qualities of all the previous elements in it. And the fifth element, which is generated by the combination of false ego and ignorance, is smell, and its gross form is earth. So earth contains everything in it. And in one of the purports where Kapila Muni is talking to Devahuti, Prabhupada explains that earth, that is why is considered to be so special. Because earth contains earth, water, fire, air and ether, and it contains all the sense objects also, which is sound, touch, smell, form and taste. So earth, that is why is considered to be so special, because it has characteristics of all the previous elements. So we see that how false ego combines with the mode of ignorance, and all these different elements and their subtle forms are generated by the combination of false ego. And each contains the previous one. And after these causes of generation are actually produced, that means false ego and combining with mode of ignorance and all this is produced, the Lord expands himself. Karna Dakshai Vishnu expands himself as Garbho Dakshai Vishnu. And he actually enters each universe. So the universe is actually in the shape of an egg. And it is just a covering. There is nothing inside the universe. So Garbho Dakshai Vishnu takes seven elements with him, which are the five material elements, earth, water, fire, air, ether. Then he takes Mahatattva, which is the combination of all the matter. And he takes false ego. So Garbho Dakshai Vishnu takes all these elements, seven elements with him, and he enters into the universe, which is shaped like an egg. And from that, when he enters inside the universe, he fills half of the universe with his with sweat, because he sweats inside the universe, and that is called as the Garbhodaka ocean. And then using all these elements, the further creation takes place. He expands himself as the universal form, and then Brahma understands how to create. So this is how the secondary creation will start, and the description will come in the third canto in more detail about this. So Prabhupada explains further. He says that when Garbho Dakshai Vishnu enters every universe with all these seven elements, they are actually covering the universe. So the universe is covered. The first layer which covers the universe is the earth, after that water, fire, air, ether, and after that the Mahatattva, and then the false ego. And Prabhupada says that each layer is 10 times thicker than the previous layer. So we can, this Prabhupada says, this gives us an idea about the dimension of the universe. And the last layer, that means the false ego layer, is actually considered to be the thickest. Because it comes after earth, water, fire, air, ether, then Mahatattva, and then false ego. So the false ego layer in this material world is the thickest, and it is the most difficult to overcome. So we read in the second canto only, in some of the previous chapters, we read about the transit of a yogi from the material world. Sukadeva Goswami was explaining to Parikshit Maharaj how a yogi leaves this world and how he goes through various elements. He has to give up, merge his body, one element of his body into the elements which he is passing through, which are covering this universe, in order to get liberation from this material world. So he has to give up his element earth inside his body, in the earth covering, then fire inside the fire covering. Like that a yogi transcends this material world. And therefore, and there Prabhupada explains that the last thing which a yogi has to give up is false ego. And we see that therefore false ego is the most difficult to give up, because it is the thickest layer in this material world, even in the gross form. And inside us also we know, it's the thickest, and it's the most conditioned or the most contaminated thing which is there inside us. And Prabhupada explains in the first paragraph of this purport that false ego is nothing but the desire of the living entity to be the enjoyer. So Prabhupada says that there is no other enjoyer except the Supreme Lord. But the living entity wants to be the enjoyer. He wants to lord it over material nature. And that is the generation of false ego. And that is the most difficult to overcome, because even in yogis we see, they are giving up everything. But then that desire for prestige and recognition is there in them, and which is a manifestation of the false ego. It's so difficult to give up this false ego in this material world. But in the next paragraph, Prabhupada explains, how can we give up this false ego? Although it is the thickest layer and it is the most difficult to overcome in a living entity, in a conditioned living entity, how to overcome this false ego? Prabhupada explains. So Prabhupada goes back and Prabhupada says that just as false ego combines with different modes of material nature to create different things, Prabhupada says that the false ego combines with mode of ignorance, and the first thing which is generated is sound. So Prabhupada says that even the Veda says that it is sound which is the basis of this entire material creation, because that is the first thing which is generated. And from sound comes sky, and then comes air, then comes water, then comes fire. So we see that every other element is actually generated from sound. So sound is the first substance, or sound is the main cause of this material manifestation. And Prabhupada explains in the purport that sound is actually the cause of entanglement, our entanglement in this material world. And then Prabhupada goes on to explain. Prabhupada says that this same sound can actually be the cause for dissolving this material entanglement, or for dissolving this material creation. So there Prabhupada says that, but that sound has to be of a particular quality, or it has to have a particular potency in it. So sound is actually the basis of this entire material creation. It is the first thing which is manifested, on which all the other material elements rest, and because of which we are entangled in this material world. But that same sound, and especially if we approach the spiritual sound which is there in the spiritual world, can become the cause of us dissolving this material elements, or us dissolving and getting out of the material entanglement. And Prabhupada says that that sound has to be a special sound. Not any ordinary sound is going to get us out of this material entanglement. It has to have particular potency. And Prabhupada says that that is the sound representation of the Supreme Lord. Only that sound can help us to come out of the material entanglement. Because in the sound representation of the Supreme Lord, the Lord has invested all his potencies. And we see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saying that in Shikshashtakam, Namna Makari Bahuda Nija Sharva Shaktis. So he has, oh my Lord, your holy name. In your holy name you have invested all of your potencies in the holy name. And Prabhupada explains that therefore this holy name of the Lord is absolutely non-different from the Lord. It is the sound representation of the Lord, and all the qualities of the Lord are present in the holy name. And therefore when we chant the holy name of the Lord, we are directly associating with the Lord. We are actually directly in contact with the Lord. And this potency of hearing the holy name will help us to cross, or will help us to overcome this entanglement of the material world, of which false ego is the biggest entanglement to overcome. So it is only the spiritual sound which will help us to cut through all the elements of the material world and go out of this material world and help us to give up our false ego. So by chanting, or by vibration of this holy name, which is Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. By vibrating this spiritual sound through our tongue and hearing it through the ear, and allowing that spiritual sound vibration to penetrate deep within our ears, will it help us to directly associate with the Lord, and then going back home, back to Godhead, becomes easy. So we see that sound is the first manifestation. From sound the sky came, and from sky the ear has generated. And therefore Prabhupada says ear, or hearing, or shrotram, or shravanam of the holy name is very important. And we see also, when we study the 9 processes of devotional service, we see the first process which has been mentioned is shravanam. Prahlad Maharaj says the first and the most important process is shravanam, or hearing. Because sound has entangled us in this material world, and it is only sound which can liberate us from this material world. So shravanam is considered to be the most important out of all the 9 processes of devotional service. And Prabhupada actually said to one of his disciples, once his disciple was asking him, they were doing some big projects in Vrindavan and Mayapur later on when Prabhupada went to India. So the disciple was asking him, so much energy and efforts are going, Prabhupada, in creating all these big temples and all these, looking after these big projects. And Prabhupada said that actually we just need to sit under a tree and chant the holy name of the Lord. That is enough. We don't need anything else. The holy name of the Lord, the sound vibration of the holy name of the Lord, is enough to take us back to Godhead. He said, but because we are so restless, because our senses are so agitated, that is why Prabhupada said, I have to engage you all in all these different activities which are related to the Supreme Lord. Because you will not be able to sit quietly under a tree and chant the holy names and without doing anything else, any other activity. Therefore, I have to do these big projects so that you all are actively, and all your senses are actively engaged in devotional service. But otherwise, just the sound vibration of the holy name, of the Hare Krishna Mahamantra, is enough. Sit under a tree, chant, and be happy and go back to Godhead, Prabhupada said. But he said it's not going to be possible, and therefore we have these different projects. So Prabhupada was stressing at that point in time that how the sound vibration of the holy name is just enough for us to give up this false ego and to give up the material entanglements and to go back to the spiritual world. So I'll just summarize because it's getting time up. So we discussed how this is a conversation happening between Narad Muni and Brahma. This chapter, entire chapter, entitled Cause of All Causes, where Narad Muni is asking series of questions to Brahma. He's a little confused and he's asking, who is the creator? How did this material world come about? Who is the controller? Who, under whose direction are you working? Where? What is the source of your knowledge? So these are some of the questions which Narad Muni asks Brahma. And then Brahma is very happy that Narad Muni is asking these questions. And we see that this is Narad Muni's intelligence in asking these questions. Because he actually sees Brahma as creating, but still he is inquiring. Because he sees Brahma as engaged in meditation and austerities. So immediately he thinks, if Brahma is doing some austerities and meditation, there must be someone superior to Brahma. So that is why Narad Muni is asking these questions. And Brahma is very happy to hear these questions. He thanks Narad Muni. And we saw how all devotees, pure devotees of the Lord, here love to glorify the Lord. And they love opportunities to speak about the Lord. So he is thanking Narad Muni that it's good you have asked these questions because the answers will benefit everyone and it also gives me an opportunity to speak about the glories of the Supreme Lord. And we see then Brahma starts describing the creation to Narad Muni and how he establishes that it's not I who is the supreme creator, but there is a creator above me and that is Lord Krishna. And he explains how he just creates based on whatever the Lord has already created for him. His entire creation is based on that, on the elements which have already been created by the Lord. And this is not the last time that the entire material creation will be discussed. It will be again discussed in third canto as a conversation between Narada Muni and, as a conversation between Maitreya Muni and Vidura. And then again as a conversation between Kapila Dev and his mother Devahuti. And again in the fifth canto it will be discussed in great detail where hellish planets, Jambudvipa, all these things will be explained in detail. So we see now Srimad Bhagavatam is stressing the importance of discussing this topic of creation. Although it gets technical, although it gets a bit dry for our conditioned mind and we start feeling that this is so philosophical and dry, there is no rasa in this. But still Srimad Bhagavatam keeps discussing this so that we realize how phenomenal this world is. Then how phenomenal the creator will be of this world. To establish the supremacy of the Lord, before we discuss the pastimes of the Lord, Srimad Bhagavatam is going into great detail about the creation. And then Brahma starts answering in detail about how the creation takes place. So we saw how there is Pradhan and Karnodakshai Vishnu glances at Pradhan. And the glance of Karnodakshai Vishnu consists of eternal time, the jivas and their karma. And then he agitates the Pradhan. The Pradhan is actually the primordial substance in this material world. He agitates the Pradhan because of which false ego and all the modes of material nature become active. And then different combinations of false ego and the modes of material nature give us different things like the mind, intelligence, demigods and working senses and also all the material elements along with the sense objects like earth, water, sky, fire, air, ether and sound, touch, form, taste, smell. And we see how sound is the first thing which is created in this material world based on which the entire material creation takes place. It is the basis of further creations. And thus it is sound which has entangled us in this material manifestation and it is sound only which can liberate us from this material manifestation. So, and that sound is actually the holy name of the Lord because it is non-different from the Lord. It has to have spiritual potency to liberate us. And therefore, Prabhupada says that chanting the holy name of the Lord will help us to come out of this material entanglement, of which false ego is the greatest. So it is only the spiritual sound vibration which will allow us or which will help us to pierce through all these coverings and give up our false ego and go back to the spiritual world, back to Godhead. So I'll end my class here. Thank you very much. Are there any questions or comments? Yes,
Prabhupada. You were mentioning that how material sound entangles because it's basically false ego and untouched with ignorance. So that's the manifestation. So with devotees, like if someone is, the devotee is in deep ignorance and we are chanting the holy name, so that the potency of the holy name be effective, or how potent will the holy name be depending on our state of tamo or rajogun or sattva?
So you're let me understand. understand. You are trying to ask that depending on how deeply entrenched a person is in the mode of ignorance, what will be the effect of this holy name on that person? When we were studying Bhakti Shastri in Canada under His Holiness Brihad Bhagwat Swami, he's a sannyasi now, he was mentioning to us that the holy name has effect irrespective of the listener, because the holy name is completely independent. Just as the Lord is Swarat, the holy name is also Swarat. It is not dependent on the receiver's condition. It is completely independent and it is fully transcendental. It has complete spiritual potency in it. And he was mentioning that, but the receivers can be at three levels. And he was comparing that with grass. So he said there can be completely wet grass. There is grass which is in semi-dried stage. And then there is hay, which has been completely dried in the sun. So he said, for example, if we take fire to wet grass, then it's not going to catch fire immediately because it's wet. But what will the fire do to the grass? It will at least dry the grass up a little bit. Even though the fire was not successful in making that grass catch light up, it actually was successful in a little bit drying up the grass. So he said, similarly, if you take the fire to the semi-dried grass, which is little wet, little dry, again the fire might not be successful in lighting up the grass. But what did the fire do? The potency of the fire dried up that grass and it brought it to the dry stage. And the fire when taken to hay, and if you keep the fire near the hay, we know what will happen. It completely lights up, and we see that practically in Australia. Like there are so many bushfires happening because of the dryness and rubbing of the trees. So whenever fire will act, whether it is, you know, dried grass, semi-dried grass or completely wet grass, the fire has potency, so it will act. But the manifestation will be in different ways based on the receiver. So the completely wet grass will just get dry. So actually the fire succeeded in making it dry because then it has gone to the second stage at least of grass. And the semi-dried grass at least went to the first stage. So next time then when fire is put to that grass, it will come light up completely. So this is comparable to people in, you know, completely in the mode of ignorance, passion and goodness. So people who are in the mode of goodness, who have done lots of pious activities, we see some of those people take up to Krishna consciousness so fast. And we are surprised, oh, they are, you know, taking up the process so quickly. And with some people, we keep trying. They are like that wet grass. They are so much in the mode of ignorance. But just as fire has the potency and it will do its work, like that the holy name has the potency, it's going to do its work. But it is just that we won't see them, you know, completely spiritualized in front of our eyes. Like His Grace Gaurang Prabhu, who's one of the speakers in Chaupati Temple, he says that sometimes as devotees, we are so enthusiastic to preach and we are so eager that when we preach we feel that that person should start chanting 16 rounds in this lifetime in front of my eyes, and we get impatient if that doesn't happen. But he said that sometimes it may not happen because that grass is wet, but the holy name has acted. We can have that assurance that the holy name has acted because it is so potent. So that person from more too much in the mode of ignorance, he has risen above slowly. So next lifetime, when he comes in contact with again the holy name, it will help him to keep progressing further. So that is what is my understanding in this question. Yes, that is.
His chanting is so potent when we hear his chanting.
Yes.
Their hearts become transformed.
Yes, yes. So what you're trying to say is that it depends on how the holy name is chanted. Because pure devotees will definitely, when they are chanting the holy name of the Lord, obviously it is carrying much more potency than when an upcoming devotee chants the holy name. Also affect.
May make a difference.
Yes.
Chanting or the
yes.
Or for giving a lecture.
Yes. You know the answer, Prabhuji, but yes,
no.
It does. It does have an effect, yes, Prabhuji. And therefore, Prabhupada says, especially I remember Prabhupada, I read somewhere, Prabhupada used to say, when we go on Harinams and all, we must take to so much shelter of the holy name and chant, try to put all our spiritual energy into chanting the holy name so that the effect is there on the hearer. So the, but as I said, the holy name is potent, but because of our conditioning, we are not chanting the holy name purely to access its potency. So as you said, Prabhupada is a pure devotee. So when he chants, he is completely accessing the full potency of the holy name. And therefore, when he chanted under that tree in Tompkins Square Park, there were so many of those hippies who got attracted, who were actually apparently in so much in the mode of ignorance. They are into drugs and all that, but they got attracted because Prabhupada was accessing the full potency of the holy name, which as upcoming devotees, some of us may not be able to access. So, what your question is that how sound is created without any vibration. But I haven't read it anywhere that there was no vibration when sound was created. So, I'm not sure there might have been some vibration. Because one of the qualities of sound is vibration. So, when we are saying false ego combines with mode of ignorance, then first the sense object called sound is created, from which sky is created. So, there might have been some vibration. I'm not sure, Prabhuji. But there must have been some vibration because that is a quality of sound. Yes, Auntie. So false ego combines with mode of goodness to create the mind, and the demigods controlling the directions. So these demigods are not those demigods which come later like Indra and all these. That is in Visarga, but this is, we are still talking about Sarga. And then the false ego combines with mode of passion to create intelligence. So when we were studying this section under Keshav Prabhu, we also had this question that how is, sometimes we say the intelligence is higher than the mind. So how is it that intelligence is a product of the mode of passion, and how is it that mind is a product of the mode of goodness? And when I was preparing for my class, I was hoping no one asked this question because I've forgotten what Keshav Prabhu had explained. I don't know if Sri Ram Prabhu remembers. you are part of the class. But from what I remember, Keshav Prabhu said that mind is, therefore there is, we call, you know, the holy name is called as mantra. So man means mind and tra means something which fixes or which controls the mind or which makes the mind peaceful. So he was saying that mind is the main function in this in a conditioned person's body. And he says, and therefore we see in the Bhagavad Gita also Lord Krishna says that mind can be the greatest enemy or the greatest friend if controlled. So he said, therefore it is born of the mode of goodness. Because it is only through mind, like mantra means deliverer of the mind. So he says that it is only through controlling the mind or delivering the mind that the conditioned soul's conditioning goes down. When the sound vibration of the Hare Krishna Mahamantra or any spiritual sound vibration is heard, it is actually affecting the mind and it is delivering the mind. And therefore he said mind is born of mode of goodness. Because it is the mind which is the receptacle of all these mantras. That is what I remember what he had explained, but I might have to do a little bit more research into our notes. Friend. Okay. Thank you so much, Mataji. So it's time up. We'll end the class here. Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Srila Prabhupada ki. Jai.